think that hymn was written sometime in the 1700s in its earliest versions, so it's standing this test of time. It's a good thing. I used a short writing from Sue Monk Kidd in the e-news this week to introduce the service for today. And because of Constant Contact, I know that 40% of you opened it. Good job. So it will be fresh to some of you and familiar to others. It began, "When my daughter was small, she got the dubious part of the Bethlehem Star in a Christmas play." The thing is, it's June. So you may be wondering why I use this reference, because it means we have to think back a bit, or forward, depending on which direction you want to go. But I know you are smart and wise people, and you will catch on to the point once we get going. So I invite you to think back, or forward, to the Christmas story for just a minute. We need to begin by remembering there are lots of important parts in this story, right? Mary and Joseph, of course, the baby, not a big speaking part, but still, the barn animals and the wise people, and who knows how many other attendants or townsfolk. There are lots of important parts in lots of stories, definitional parts, game-changing parts. Maybe that's why Ms. Kidd described her daughter's part as dubious. Maybe she didn't think the star was very important. She might want to rethink that. Still, we have seen lots of Christmas pageants, right? I imagine many of you have as well, if not right here at Theodore Parker Church, then at other places of worship. And perhaps you have even starred, no pun intended, in some of them. There are, as mentioned, always a whole cast of characters and lots of costumes. Mary always has that lovely blanket draped over her head, remember? And Joseph and the wise people have headbands around their foreheads holding the square pieces of fabric in place. One year we made sheep ears with headbands and cotton balls glued to them. That was good. I know you've seen lots of these costumes, but I'm not sure I have ever seen a pageant where the star was embodied exactly. Maybe that's why Ms. Kidd thought the part was dubious. Mostly, and this may sound familiar, the star is kind of a cardboard thing, since church budgets are often what they are, brought up from the basement from maybe the one used over the last 5 or 10 years. It has points that are pretty much always curling in a little bit, and the paint is worn, and someone re-glues on the glitter so that all over again the carpet is covered with tiny gold flecks like a little miniature snowstorm. But not this time. This time they left the cardboard in the basement, and this time the Bethlehem Star was a person. Ms. Kidd continues, "After her first rehearsal, she burst through the door with her costume, a 5-pointed star lined in shiny gold tinsel designed to drape over her like a sandwich board." Can you imagine? A 5-pointed star with tinsel that drapes and sparkles and catches the light as the child moves. And seriously, who doesn't want to have a chance to be draped in gold? We can imagine the child's enthusiasm, can't we? A good costume, the right outfit, the perfect pair of shoes, the right tie. Sometimes that's really what it's all about. And she runs into the kitchen, all set to share her sparkling little self. And Sue Kidd continues, "What exactly will you be doing in the play?" I asked her. And I thought when I read that, what is it with parents? Or any of us, really, who wonder things like that. What exactly will you be doing in the play? As if being about the tinsel isn't a really big deal. Authority figures are always wondering, shouldn't we want to be the lead? Shouldn't we want to be Mary or Joseph? He made such a big decision, after all, to marry her, even though she was pregnant. Or even, I don't know, one of the angels or a sheep, we could do some really good baas. Yours probably are better than mine. What exactly will you be doing in the play? I asked her. What do you want to be when you grow up? How are you going to afford your life? What will you accomplish? What exactly will you be doing in the play? And we imagine in the most wonderful look up, look around, open-hearted response. Mom, why would you ask a question with such an obvious answer? The child replies, I just stand there and shine. By God, or the spirit of life, or some curious twist of fate, she imagines, I was given a beautiful, bright life. I was made a star. So I will humbly and wholeheartedly embrace my five-pointed, tinseled life and shine. She might as well have said, Mom, sweet pea, when I stand up in front of the whole crowd in my beautiful, glittering attire, I will be a blessing. In my shining moment, in my quiet presence, I will be a blessing. She makes it sound so simple. I just stand there and shine. And so sort of enviable in a way. Everyone else in the story has to remember words and timing and movement and when to pick up the baby and where do the wise men stand anyway and why is that little sheep still baaing? But no, she says, I just stand there and shine. She almost makes us covet that part. It doesn't even need to be Christmas for that miracle. Covered in tinsel, twinkling to beat the band, and with no apparent effort. She almost makes us covet that part. Almost. Because, to be honest, we live in a pretty competitive culture. When is the last time you simply wanted to be the one who is asked to just stand there with your tinsel on and be a blessing by virtue of your shine? No speaking part, no grand gestures or words of wisdom to offer. You're not sure about the bonus. You're pretty sure not many will even know it was you behind those glittering points. No accolades heaped on your brilliant performance. Just, you know, shine for all the world to see. I will tell you, my friends, that the one who can pull that off, who can genuinely be an inspired and sparkling, simple star. Now that is a blessing. And some of you pull it off beautifully. I know you do. Why is it so hard for the rest of us? Why is it so hard to think that by God or by the spirit of life or by some curious twist of fate, I was given a beautiful, bright life? I was made a star, and so I will humbly and wholeheartedly embrace my five-pointed, tinseled life and shine. Clark Wells gave us this amazing thought years ago in a different writing of his. It is not always the great evils that obstruct and waylay our joy, he said. It is our unnecessary and undignified surrender to the petty enemies. By which he may have meant pride or self-importance or aspiration to a particular kind of greatness that those around us might admire, or measuring up to some standard of achievement imposed on us by the world at large. I suggest, Wells continues, it is our duty to scheme against them and make them subservient to human decree. Matters more subtle and humane should command our lives. Matters more subtle and humane, like looking up and around, being present to each other, shining. The dictionary says a blessing, which is, by the way, our theme for the month of June, blessing. The blessing is a thing conducive to happiness or welfare. I'm glad they said or. It occurs to me that sometimes blessings are about the happiness, and sometimes they are about needing it for our welfare, and on occasion, those two things are not the same. Our tinsel fades a bit at times. Our star tips turn in, and we need the light of another source. The poet John O'Donohue offers the poem Blessing for occasions like these. On the day when the weight deadens on your shoulders and you stumble, may the clay dance to balance you. And when your eyes freeze behind the gray window and the ghost of lost gets into you, may a flock of colors, indigo, red, green, and azure blue, come to awaken in you a meadow of delight. When the canvas frays in the curragh of thought, and a stain of ocean blackens beneath you, may there come across the waters a path of yellow moonlight to bring you safely home. May the nourishment of the earth be yours. May the clarity of light be yours. May the fluency of the ocean be yours. May the protection of the ancestors be yours. And so may a slow wind work these words of love around you, an invisible cloak to mind your life. I wonder if sometimes the cloak he writes of is golden, covered in tinsel, and there, but for our notice. These are these days we're living in, such complicated times. It feels that there are at hand what Wells called those great evils, and there is much to do to turn the world in the direction of goodness and compassion. I suppose it is always so. But many of us feel so intensely the need to be doing and acting and changing. These times require it of us, attention, engagement, and we must bear witness to our simpler needs. The world too little values the humble act of shining, or the daily gifts of the earth and her creatures, or the significance of noticing each other, but these are the blessings that refresh. This tradition that we choose, that our new members have chosen among us today, assures us that the act of blessing, of being, of bestowing blessing, is not reserved for clergy, nor for those somehow understood to have closer connections to the holy or the divine, to be more contemplative. Ours is the prophethood of all believers, and each and every one of us, each and every one of you, and each and every creature has the capacity to be a blessing. We are all in the business of being blessings to this life when we choose to. Sometimes it's really important to just stand there and shine, to be content to reflect the light of life for others. And when our spirits are sufficiently filled, not full necessarily before, is it ever so that they are full, but sufficiently filled, then to look up and notice, to look around and engage as our hearts will be open. But first, just stand there and shine. By God or the spirit of life or some curious twist of fate, you were given a beautiful, bright life. You were made a star. May you be blessed as you are each a blessing. May it be so.